Resistance. Movement. Radio. Woman's Movement. Radio. Welcome to Woman's Movement Radio Show today. I'm your host, Janae Eisenstrauss. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to our show today. As always, we'll be speaking to women all around the world about business, love, and lifestyle, bringing you inspiration, motivation, by always aspiring to keep you informed, inspired, and incredibly successful. We have a great show planned for all of you today. When we return, we'll be talking about meeting your soul. Are you a woman who is serious about starting an online business that will allow you to create sustainable wealth and growth? Well, we've done the research. Let us introduce you to some of the best business professionals that have researched numerous business concepts and provide you with great free advice for developing a sustainable business online. Visit us at womensbusinesssourceonline.com. Today's show is going to be truly insightful. We have a great guest coming on today who is going to teach us how to connect with our most sacred self. Now, I know you've heard this type of verbiage lingering around the world of inspiration as, and exactly what is my most sacred self? How do I connect with my most high self? Well, on our show today, we are going to be interviewing Alisa Romeo, who, after having an out-of-body experience, met her soul and in the process found a powerful ally to help her create the life of her dreams. Since she's done that, she's helped thousands of clients forge their own direct soul connections, and our readers can do the same by getting her latest book, Meet Your Soul. When we return, we'll be back with Alisa Romeo.
The hottest new gel polish just got cooler. Reaction by Gel 2. Color-changing polish that heats up and cools down, transforming your look. 12 temperature-activated colors that evolve with you. For a perfect manicure that strengthens nails, choose Gel 2. What's your reaction?
Hi, everyone. We're back today on Women's Movement Radio Show. We have Alisa Romeo, who is the author of the book called Meet Your Soul. How are you, Alisa?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Amazing, amazing. Loved your book. Thought it was super exciting. Wanted to know what inspired you to create this book.
You know, I felt the call. I had originally written a different book, and it was that was the one that I was initially contracted with Hay House to do. And then they sent me out there to a writer's workshop in New York. I live in Seattle. And when I was out there, Sophia, my soul, came in pretty loud and said, you know what, we're doing this other book first. And so then I was on a different kind of timeline to move my 140 pages of notes into a book as quick as I could. And that the results Meet Your Soul.
Well, I see that the book is quite extensive, and I have to say, it was a really good read. I wanted to go into, for those listening, I want you to describe, what does it mean to be soul-centered?
To be soul-centered is to put your soul first with every decision in your life. So instead of making decisions from our ego or our personality or our identity that we think we are, the ego learns to get in relationship to the eternal, inherent part of us that's available, that's all-loving, all-wise, and then use that energy to make all our decisions so that the soul becomes the center of our life.
Well, in chapter two, you talked about there's a difference between the spirit and the soul. Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, a lot of times this is kind of shocking information for people. My background is very interested in Carl Jung, and a lot of the Jungians distinguish the difference between spirit and soul. And I think it's really helpful because there's basically two different types of spirituality that we all have available to us. The spirit side is the part that's transcendent. That's the part that's interested in enlightenment. So that is kind of the voice that connects us to all is one, it's all good. But the soul is traditionally associated more with the feminine, and she is the attached form of spirituality. And like the feminine in many ways on the planet, she's not often, she's sometimes minimized because it's usually compared, the goal is enlightenment, the kind of more masculine spirituality. And when I say masculine and feminine, I don't mean gender. It's more of an energy thing, like a yin-yang energy, because you can be a man with a feminine soul or a woman with a masculine soul. But the soul in general is interested in incarnating. She wants us to be fully present, fully activated and alive. She wants us to embody her and achieve our soul lessons. So she's the wisdom of the spirituality of a mother holding her dying child, or an Olympian running their victory lap. That's the feel when you're attached to the planet. And so that's not enlightenment, that's about enlivenment, how we can fully bring the wisdom of our unique self down in body, incarnated here on the planet, and take up space for other people and share love in that way. So the book is about meeting your soul. It's about how to connect to that soul part of you. And I think in general, in kind of the New Age spiritual arena, it's usually spirit-focused. So there's a lot of books about mindfulness and meditating in that way, but this book's about waking up while you're here as a human.
What did you mean by life versus death wish?
That, you know, is one of the first chapters, and it's, we always have within us, every person, unless maybe you're one of the 10 people on the planet that are avatars, completely kind of coming back just to help the humans, but you figured it all out. There's a dynamic going on of the life wish part of us battling the death wish, and it's usually very unconscious. So the life wish part of us is the soul, the part that wants us to achieve our soul mission and our plan and follow the particular beauty of that soul's unique love plan. The death wish is the part of us that is resistance. It's, what's the point? I don't even know I'm doing this. I don't even know if there's anything more. Maybe the world is just the physical, and not being connected to the very real, subtle, invisible energies that want to guide us to love.
Well, I, one of the reasons why I was asking about that is because I know that many people listening will probably feel that way. There are times, exactly what you said in that chapter, about where you're constantly warring against yourself. I've heard other spiritualists even talk about, like, they feel, they sometimes finding their grounding, on depending on the day, is difficult. Like, you can actually feel like there's something, like your soul wants to be free, and it's just like kind of like aching to want to separate from this body. I don't know if that's...
Definitely, yeah, for sure. And sometimes I call it incarnation issues, you know, where the death wish is like, I don't know if I really want to be here. You might not, I used to work on suicide lines, and so it's like you might not have a plan and intent. You might not be like, I have a gun, I'm going to use next Thursday. But it's kind of a low-grade feeling you can find in your body. That's like, I don't know if I want to be here on planet Earth. It's hard. And it can be, sometimes the odds feel really against us. Part of my soul path was to work in rehab. So I worked with a lot of addicts. And what addiction is just death wish that's winning. And so, you know, we're using a drug or sex or porn or whatever, exercise, shopping. To escape.
And this escapism, and I'm going to spend a little time with you talking about this, because this escapism is something that we've seen that is quite trending, right? Unfortunately, trending in our current societal dialogue, considering that we have all of this, whether it be soul content, inspirational content, however people want to perceive it, or self-help content permeating around us. And we've also seen high rates of suicide taking place, more so. And we know that suicide is one of those things that has no respecter of person. It doesn't matter if you are someone that is regardless of where you are on the chain of hierarchy, celebrity, the average Joe Schmo that lives next door, we've seen that it doesn't matter. People are still battling this life versus death wish in the background. Since you've revealed that you used to work in rehab, how did you aid people in overcoming this, wanting to have the passion to live? Because I know, and you can definitely appreciate this, Alisa, many entrepreneurs even feel this way. There are many entrepreneurs that feel like they've been toiling and toiling and toiling and toiling and are just becoming to the point of where they're emotionally exhausted. Like, when is this really going to happen? Am I really going down the right path? Am I really supposed to be doing this? I don't really want to do this anymore. And they become weary in the process to the point of where they start questioning everything else in their life. How would you go about aiding someone to a place of understanding that you have a purpose, you are here to live, and helping them to embrace their soul journey, as opposed to, you know, just even with gratitude? Like, I'm talking even for the people that are in a place of acknowledging that there's gratitude, keeping a journal, doing the affirmations, you know, how do you find that place of where you're grounded in the fact of, I'm supposed to be here. There's a reason why I'm here, and feel happy in that place.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why we're all here, and everybody's reason is different. And so what I do, you know, what I learned to do in the rehabs is to help people meet their soul, because literally that is, when you connect someone's ego to their life wish, they don't want to die anymore. And when they can feel their soul, when they fall in love with their soul and understand they're not alone, they're being guided, that source of wisdom is always available, then the crystal meth seems less appealing. And so I had kind of it, you know, big in the rehabs, my training, but it's the same thing I do with every client, every, you know, high-functioning, non-addicted client. I do the same thing, is learn to connect them to their soul. So if they're an entrepreneur and they're struggling and they don't know if they should keep going or not, they get the information from their soul, because sometimes when our ego is doing a plan that we think is right, it's geared to fail, because our soul loves us so much, she's trying to bring us home to the bigger plan. So sometimes we interpret failure on a physical level as rejection, like, oh, I lost that job, or that relationship didn't work out. But sometimes the soul is orchestrating it, because she's like, I didn't want you there. That wasn't the best use of you. And actually, what I want you to do is doing this over here. And maybe it's a surprise to your ego, or maybe it's not what you thought the plan should be. But when you can learn, I teach soul journaling in the book, Meet Your Soul, so that your ego can then learn to hear the practical, grounded, daily information of, today, do this for your business. Don't do this. I mean, I wrote Meet Your Soul like this. I asked my soul, Sophia, what chapter am I working on today? What's the information I need to convey? What are the exercises I need? And it's a simple thing, talking to yourself, but the reality is we're full of different complexes, psychological complexes. So we have a whole bunch of different inner characters. We have our mother. We have you know, the good ones that are trying to guide us home, and then the gremlins that are trying to sabotage us. So it's starting to connect. You're basically learning to channel your soul, so that you're raising your brain state from beta to theta, and you're learning to activate that most wise part of yourself. Part of what I talk about in the book is what happened to me is, it's not a concept, your soul. It is really a real thing existing energetically. I can see it. And I had an out-of-body experience when I was in grad school studying to become a therapist, where I had in a meditative state, left my body, saw my body from above, and then joined this incredible source of love that was my soul. When I joined it as a consciousness, I remembered why I incarnated. My soul contracts with my parents, even the hard ones, and all kinds of things. And then when I was leaving that state, there was kind of like a no feeling as I went from knowing everything to coming back down into the human ego of Alisa Romeo. And so that experience changed my entire life. It shapes all the work I do. It showed me that this isn't concepts. You know, we always talk about your soul, be your soul, feed your soul, follow your soul. What does that mean? Your soul is actually a real entity existing on a different plane that when you die, you will go back to. And you'll have a little mini life review, and it'll be like, the only thing that matters is, to what degree were you being your soul down there? And what your soul is the unique form of love that you came here to be. So it's different for each person. So my literal mission here on Earth is to help people connect to their souls. And to not look externally. You know, I think we always look outside to different programs. So that what can make me happy, you know? But it's so unique for each person. So really the answer is always figuring out how to ask your soul.
Well, I was going to say, you already touched upon this. And I know in Chapter 6, you talk about the power of prayer. Now, I want people listening. This is not your... It's what you're talking about is soul praying, not the traditional religious format of praying that people are talking about. And I want to know, what is the difference in how does one pray to its soul? Because just to lend a little bit more to conversation, because you just talked about seeing some of the invisibles, all right? How do we pray so that way we can activate seeing the invisibles? Because I find like if people were able to soul pray and see the invisibles, it would probably aid in sustaining them through the journey. Because when life will definitely come to batter you. And I want people are always like, well, you know, I think people equate happiness with like this form of perfection. Like when I find happiness, nothing's going to be wrong anymore. And that's just not the reality. There's always going to be something. And it's aiding people and providing them with the necessary life tools to realize like when something does happen, these are the coping tools that you can use to weather the storm. Explain that through prayer and how we can see the invisibles.
Yeah, well, and there's different types of happiness. A lot of times what most people are chasing is ego pleasure, which is not the same as true soul happiness. So, and when anytime we're attached to sustaining a particular emotional state, that's a hell, that's a prison, because it's guaranteed we're going to have changing emotional states. So, and then anytime if you're feeling not happy, if you're thinking something's wrong, then that's definitely setting yourself up for failure. As opposed to understanding, maybe part of your unhappiness might be a message. Maybe it's guidance. Maybe it's on purpose. Maybe there's some stuff you need to, sometimes you need to break down to break through. Sometimes you have to feel the heavy feelings to release them and give yourself room. And then what's the difference between living in depression and then just releasing some of that stuff? That's all the kind of stuff I cover in the book. But in terms of prayer, my understanding and feeling of the soul is that it's the highest unique version of yourself kind of before the energy of God. To me, God is love showing up energetically everywhere in every universe. So it's not a religious idea of a God, but just the hum of the universe. So if God makes you feel uncomfortable, you can say big love or life force or whatever you want to call it. But it's that energy that is interconnected to all of us and has a plan. This energy has a plan. It's not random and meaningless. But when we're in death wish, it all feels random and meaningless. And then we get to choose which kind of a universe are we living in, a meaningful one or a meaningless one. And so definitely anytime you're struggling, you're sitting there with that life wish, death wish choice. And so prayer connects you to the love. And so, but really every thought we have is a mini prayer. You know, even if it's like, oh, I look good in that dress, or I look horrible in that dress, you're sending an intention, you're sending a vibration with every thought. So prayer is just, to me, kind of like where you're having a contained space to amplify your thoughts, your intentions, your heart desire, and make conscious what you want to manifest in your life. So prayer can be really varied based on each person, you know, how your soul wants you to pray. Maybe your soul wants you to walk in the woods with your dog and laugh. Some souls, maybe you want to, I remember a woman I had who she was doing Zen meditation 4 hours a day, and she was like thinking she was really spiritual. We talked to her soul. Her soul was like, I want you doing big artworks to like rock music. That was how she was going to connect in prayer. And to be more kind of like embodied and juicy in that way. And so prayer is just giving yourself, time and space to connect to the reality of the invisibles, where you're silencing that talking ego mind that can totally take us off our course, and creating space to really get conscious of what you want, your deepest heart desire, not your ego, but what your life is wanting from you. And starting to understand that all the mistakes and accidents of your life are on purpose. They're all set to gear you in a certain direction. Even the hard really intense stuff. I use example in the book of my friend who lost her baby at 6 months and another woman whose nose collapsed on her face in a nose surgery, you know? And so it's like, why, if the soul is love, are these things happening to us? And it's not because the soul is sadistic and wants to, like, torture us. It's because she wants us to know that you are love in every situation. And you might have a harder syllabus than someone else. Your plan might be more intense of how you need to remember and know love. But it's all geared and designed perfectly to break you open into that unique form of love that your soul is trying to get you to become conscious of. So prayer just assists the process.
Well, I was going to say, how does, what do you say to the people that say, well, you know, we've been conditioned by society that, you know, love isn't supposed to be hard. Love is supposed to be this very easy ebb and flowing thing, because we see a lot of that content permeating in mainstream self development or self inspiration. And we see it in even in some inspirational content that we see on television, right?
There's a lot of different words for things that people say is love. You know, a lot of people think codependency is love. A lot of people don't understand codependency. And codependency is based...
A lot of people really don't understand codependency.
Yeah. And it's so sad, the kind of boiled down accumulation of what the love people are searching for that's portrayed in the mainstream media. Because you know what it usually is? It's about the package. So it's about love is physical. Love is temporal. Love is about our behaviors, and it's not about connecting to the essential soul behind it. But love is actually, yeah. I was talking to a woman last night. So many women feel like, I'm getting wrinkles, I'm this age, I can't find love, love's over for me. It's like, really, is that the love we're looking for? And one woman told me last night, well, that's what I see in the physical world. And I told her, maybe you should stop looking at the physical world. Maybe you need to start developing the sight where you can be energetically aware and start to notice where love is. And love, we're trying to turn into love. That's our goal as humans. So it's like, you don't need to look externally for a specific relationship to, you know, like say your ego's okay. What you need to do is become love more, so you can have love in all your relationships, in all the moments with every stranger, everywhere, so that you're turning into love, and then it's like love's everywhere.
Would you say that we're turning into love, or are we already love and just becoming more awakened to the fact that we are love? Because I think it's through our awakeness that we're going to actually see the invisibles and see energetically that we are completely love. Yeah. A lot of the self-loathing that we walk around and we carry truly comes from a place of what you're sharing, is though looking at those externals, you know. We live in a society that is, we're so inundated with content that it's snuffed out us from even using our internal navigation tool.
Yeah.
In order to
What you're saying is more accurate. It's more true in that you're right. Like, we are love, and then we're becoming aware that we are. But the reason I put it like that, and the reason I have the soul that your ego's talking to it, is because for most of us, we're identified as the ego and not the soul.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're identified as the soul, you know it because you feel it. And, you know, it's not a concept anymore.
And I think it's also about the acceptance too, right, Alisa? Because I think going back to what I originally said, many people associate this path of happiness is that, okay, when I do find the soul connection, they almost think that they're never going to revert or never have feelings of frustration or never have feelings of inadequacy, and that's just not the reality. It's like even what Debbie Ford's work, right, when we talk about the shadow effect, and the shadow talks about, this is not about hiding, this is not about, you know, dismissing, this is not about, and we talk about this with not emoting and deflecting and doing all of these things that are just putting everything else out there. It's really about accepting the process and becoming grounded in the journey.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are scared of our shadow or want to spiritually bypass. I talk about that in the book, where you are only identified as spirit, so you're not addressing the human part of you, where there's a lot of gold and jewels there too. But because it's kind of harder or maybe messy, we think we're doing it wrong. Like, life should be all perfect and shiny and rainbows and unicorns, but that's not what the soul's interested in or cares about. It's more about being authentic and being, you know, your unique form of love, as opposed to matching a picture of what you think is spiritual or what you think your life should look like.
And for those listening, I think the hardest thing for, and it's for all of us that become awakened, it's the fact that our prism has been so tainted from the time we come out of the womb. It has been tainted, and from our projection, from our parents have placed on us, what society places on us. And it's really our soul's journey. When we tap into that soul journey, it's really about us following this path and being that grounded to trust in the journey. And I can't even stress this trusting in the journey anymore, because, like, one of the things is that, and I'm going to ask you this question next, what is soul amnesia, to expand upon this conversation, because I know that a part of us, we almost, when we do become awakened, it's almost like we wish that we could erase everything that ever existed prior and move forward completely in this place of, okay, now this is a brand new day. Meanwhile, that's what we do want, and we actually have the ability to transmute everything that happened prior and rewrite everything as it is present, to what we want presently. However, I feel because many of us are overcoming those mental and emotional blockages, we almost become stagnant in the process. How do we now orchestrate our soul, then, Alisa, to guiding us into the land of where we start removing these blockages and then reclaiming our soul life?
Yeah, well, soul amnesia is basically when you have an intuition, you have connection to your soul, but then later you go back into your normal egoic brain state. And the ego is not bad. It's part of the whole setup, part of the contract of being human, but it needs to have its kind of righteous place, which is serving the soul. A lot of people want to annihilate the ego, and I'm not all about that. I'm more about having love and compassion for the ego, because I've worked with too many people with mental illness that literally their egos are not annihilated and it's ended up in schizophrenia or things like that. So for me, it's like, we want to be kind to the human part of ourselves that is struggling. And there are energies that are not wanting us to connect to our souls around us. You know, some are in the media, this or that. You know, sometimes it's our food, you know, junk food, whatever. Things that are dulling down our clarity. Mm-hmm. So it is a hard battle to kind of stay connected. But the soul...
Is like what you talked about with the codependency. The codependency, yeah, that we can even keep keeping relationships in our lives. Like, we've put so much emphasis on attachment in our culture, you know, because, yeah, this woman gave birth to me, or because this man was my father, or because this person is my brother. We have such unrealistic expectations, not understanding that we can actually go out and create what we want to experience if we're willing to move away from these unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, and codependency is basically can look a lot like love, but the energy behind codependency is fear-based. So yeah. I always use the example of, like, someone's sick and you bring them soup. Is that love or codependency? And the answer is, like, it depends. It depends, were you doing it from a place of, I want them to like me, I should do this as a good person, or some fear kind of thoughts, or are you doing it from, I love them and I'm giving to this gift of love unattached, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they can look really similar. So it's not the behavior, but it is, are you motivated from love or fear? Because if you're being motivated from fear, that's okay. It's okay to be scared, but it's about recognizing, becoming conscious of where your little inner gremlin's telling you you're not good enough, or that you need this relationship, or that you need this next client or whatever, or you're not good enough. And that will have an energetic ramification in the world and in the universe. And it's amazing. We're always surrounded and being watched. You know, there's always, like, spirits rooting for us. And we always feel so alone and separate and isolated. But it's there. It's just on a different vibrational plane. I know, because I hear and talk to them all the time. One of the things I do for people is connect people to their loved ones on the other side, and that happened to me. My dad came back after he passed away, and I really didn't even believe in this stuff. I was like, I think we fade to black, you know? But then it was like, we go on as consciousness, and that's crazy. And so there's a bigger plan than just this one lifetime. Our soul is working lifetimes trying to make us consciously turn into love.
Well, Alisa, one of the things that I know that you brought up in the book, just before we wind up here, you were talking about who, me, reclaiming my spiritual authority. And I'm going to share a story with you. When I've been awakened for a while on this journey, and I remember I was going through a lot of highs and lows at the beginning. And the lady that was coaching me at the time, or one of my coaches, she said to me, "Are you protecting your energy?" And I remember her providing me with this prayer and showing me how to pray a prayer. It was a little bit more ritualistic, but it was something that I definitely did need, because I was the type of person, being an empath, I would avoid any large groups of people, hated grocery stores, malls. And when I did have to engage those places, I would always go in at like very early in the morning, so I didn't have to be around large groups of people. So I started praying for the first time. I started doing this probably in the first month. That's probably going back a few years ago. And then I remember you know that space where you fall asleep and like in between, you're almost fully asleep, but you're kind of still partially awake. I actually, for the first time, saw a being. And this being was, and this is one of the things that I wanted you to talk about, because sometimes when we become awakened, we also attract people that are very much vibrating on our frequency. But we also attract low vibrational things, right? Because those are the low vibrational things that we attract are things that are the unresolved things. So we're, even though that we're maybe unconscious that we're projecting, we're attracting that. And I remember attracting this, let's call it a spirit. I'm just going to call it a spirit. I remember attracting, the spirit came to me while I was in the state and attempted to choke me so I could not speak, and said that it was attempting to subject me to a lifetime of mental health issues. And I couldn't speak, obviously, but in my head, I said I transmute this experience beyond all time, spaces, dimensions, and reality. And then it disappeared. Now, I wanted to know, how does one deal with those situations? Have you ever dealt with a situation like that?
Oh, I've dealt with a lot of those situations. One thing I do is clear haunted houses for people. So I've definitely seen some dark spirits. And there are dark spirits. Anybody who tells you that there are not dark spirits, I would not work with, because you want any shaman or whatever to be aware of how to navigate all the different entities that can present themselves. Of course, there is a attracting element, you know, of what you're attracting into your reality. But oftentimes, just like what you're attracting into the physical reality, it's all set up for us to know love in all dimensions. And that's the soul contract between us and those lower level entities, is can we know love when fear is activated in our space? Because I'm sure that was scary for you to be choked, you know?
It's actually very scary, because I've had the only time, one of my things is, and I'll talk to you about after our interview about this, but one of the things that I've always had this, and I was always aware that I have the ability to do this, but I actually see people for exactly what they are. And what I mean by that is that I don't really care. Like, I've seen people lie. I don't care about their lying and all of that stuff, because all of those things are insecurity. So when I look at somebody, I remember being a kid and being like, oh, that person does this, and that person does that. And I'm saying this in my head. I was never verbalizing this out loud to people because I was like, I don't want to share this with people because people are going to think something's wrong with me. So even when it happened to me as a teenager, I was just not aware of what this was. So you just kind of, you're now living in fear because God forbid if I tell anybody what this is and something's wrong. And then also there was cultural reasons as to why I would not say it. Now by no means do I use this as a tool. I don't really even use it, but I think it's what's made me effective in doing what I do now.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to see beyond what people want, right?
Yeah. And you can, you know, use that navigation system of what's really going on with people. I sense that too all the time, you know, and it's a way of being psychic. And it sounds like you have a lot of psychic gifts. And as an empath, my first book is called Authentic Intuition, and it's how to navigate that stuff. Like you're saying, you're keeping yourself isolated because you're so sensitive. And then when we're sensitive empaths, sometimes we get burned out because it's like we don't have the tools. Usually we're not taught in Western society, like how to protect our energy, how to call our energy back, how to move energies out of our body, you know, how to deal with energetic vampires, all that stuff, or spirits out of body, you know, that come to us. So it's really important to know how to manage your energy field so that you can have the energy to live your soul path. I talked to a woman last night. She was an incredibly gifted soul. She was like awesome, like so awake and connected, but she was so bombarded by energies that she wasn't useful on the planet to herself and to others because she was spending all her time being burned out. And her soul doesn't want her burned out. You know, her soul wants her on the front lines being love for all of us. So sometimes that's the first step is learning to, manage your energy so that you can live out loud.
Well, Alisa, it's been wonderful and such a great and diverse conversation. Just before you go, is there any last words of inspiration that you could provide to those listening?
I would say if you're listening to this, you're meant to hear this. And if you're getting ahas and you're feeling something in your gut that's guiding you in a certain direction, follow it, because that is your soul talking to you. And it is the most beautiful form of love that is available to you on the planet. And it is so worthy, and you are meant to feel and know that. So thanks for listening.
And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Thank you so much, Alisa. Everyone, go out and get Meet Your Soul by Alisa Romeo. Great book, Hay House featured author. And thank you once again, Alisa.
Thank you so much.
Mom's Movement Radio Show on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. with me, your host, Janae Eisenstrauss, where we will talk to moms all around the world about business, love, and lifestyle. Join us and be a part of a movement of moms who are changing their lives by force. So thankful that Alisa was on the show today. I'm hoping that for all of you listening, that you truly got a clear understanding of the distinction between your ego, spirit, and your soul. And then also that how to define your soul truth and the concepts on how our family, our friends, and society influence that. And most of all, I hope that you were able to figure out how to tap into your intuition and stop the self-sabotaging so that way you can live a life of prosperity, progression, and power. Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to Women's Movement Radio Show today. I'm your host, Janae Eisenstrauss. Tune in here on Tuesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And ladies, as you go out into the week, never forget, be informed, be inspired, be incredibly successful.